Talks are going on in Qatar. Negotiators from the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar trying to work something out, despite some very high hurdles to be cleared. New York City's Albert Einstein College of Medicine will be going tuition-free. It's thanks to a $1 billion donation. On Wall Street, stocks are lower. The Dow down 135 points, NASDAQ off 93. This is SRN News.
Conservative Theological University has provided biblical theological education for God's pastors, evangelists, missionaries, and Christian educators since 1982. CTU would be delighted to assist you in your Bible studies. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE today. The CTU campus is located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, 1 mile south of I-295. Leave your contact info today at 1-800-GO-BIBLE.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have as our special guest today, Rebecca Nathanson. Rebecca is the school board candidate for District 3 here in Duval County for the Duval County School Board. We're looking forward to what God is going to do in her candidacy. And I'm openly saying every vote counts. I am thankful for those that will take a stand on moral ethical issues linked with the academic process in our public school system. I believe it's time parents become aware of what's taking place in their child's classroom and insist that our school board members do that which is right and honorable in the academic process and in the moral academic process of making sure that that student is protected from harm and danger while on the campus, and that student is not just simply being indoctrinated, but properly educated. So again, Rebecca, I'm thankful that you're here, looking forward to what God is going to do in your candidacy. What is your plan to engage parents? How do you plan on getting parents involved? What I have found, if I can just do a little parenthetical footnote to that, I found perhaps the most difficult thing, whether it's in the political realm, the school board, any other process of academia, or in the process of spiritual things, is to get people involved, to get them willing to volunteer, get them to participate in the process. So what is your plan to get parents motivated to become involved?
Yeah, it's a great question, because speaking from experience over the last couple of years, it took me months just to get oriented as a regular constituent to understand the business of the board and to know where to find important information. Mm-hmm. So I think, obviously, with Florida Sunshine Laws, the district and the board do the right thing by posting public meetings. But I think as a board member, I would alert community members to big decisions facing the board. I could even continue to use things like my newsletter and social media to let board members know when there's an important workshop or a meeting coming up mm-hmm. that the board needs to hear from the public on, for example. Another really practical thing is that oftentimes the district forms what they call stakeholder committees, and oftentimes they do include parents, but that information of how those committees are formed is not transparent, and oftentimes the school board members are not even aware of how the committee was formed. I would like to see a policy where anytime there's a stakeholder committee of community members, that the board members could appoint someone to that mm-hmm. committee, and mm-hmm. that would help, again, boost public engagement.
Yes.
And just make sure people who want to be engaged at a deeper level know about those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea. Mm-hmm. By the way, just a little thought as you were speaking then approached my thinking. What is the single, and I know there are multiple, and we'll talk about several more of them, but what is the single most important issue facing the Duval County school system today, in your opinion?
Oh, goodness. Out of the top three, I'm trying to name one. It's either the school safety and security or the academic achievement, but they go hand in hand.
Hand in hand.
They go hand
one
in hand.
One dictates the other.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, and you may or may not be aware of this, as long as Dr. Green was the superintendent of schools in Duval County, she took the position that you could have any student that would have gender dysphoria and would go in any bathroom he or she wanted to go into. And that was left intact. In fact, I believe, if I am not mistaken, in the policy and procedure for Duval County School Board, that is clearly stated as part of the policy. Now, and to switch gears and to come back to the point, in the state of North Carolina, the one that is the under the governor, the lieutenant governor, says very clearly and publicly, if you go into a restroom that is not appropriate for your birth gender, we're going to lock you up. What is your position on that for our public school system? I think that we have students that are baffled with it. We have students that are, quote, called straight, that's afraid to say anything because of intimidation. We have teachers that perhaps do not know the policy and the procedure. We have school board members that, for the most part, are too weak-minded to take a stand and say something. What is the position that you feel our school board in Duval County should take publicly and policy-wise on that issue?
Right. They were, I could say, forced to take a position on the matter. They passed a policy last year requiring students to use the restrooms that match their sex,
mm-hmm.
their biological sex.
The birth agenda.
Which obviously to most of us is common sense and the right
yes,
thing to do.
Right.
What's interesting is the two board members that opposed that were the two men on the school board,
mm-hmm.
and most of us see it as a safety issue for females.
Yes, absolutely.
So the board passed the policy in the correct manner. I say they were forced to because state statute was going to require it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an issue, and there are so many facets to the issue, like you mentioned, because this is one of the issues that got me activated a few years ago, because I had parents of daughters in the school system that were telling us that their students were coming home saying boys were allowed in the bathroom.
That's right.
When the parent would ask the school district, the school district gave unclear or foggy statements.
Or deceptive statements.
Yes. What we would hear oftentimes is, at the higher level, is that's not happening, that's not happening, that's
right.
not happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we're hearing conflicting information from students and families on the ground.
In the reality.
So the policy is clear. And I pray and hope that it is being enforced, but mm-hmm. that is something that the board needs to deal with in terms of holding the superintendent accountable to comply with
yes.
the policy.
It's the board's responsibility to make sure that whoever is selected in the future, and we'll talk about that in a moment, for the new superintendent of schools, that he or she will follow state rules, regulations, and laws,
absolutely.
And will follow the policy and procedure set forth based on those state rules, regulations, and laws to be implemented on the local level.
Absolutely.
And I see that that is a major deficit, has been in the past. What are your thoughts, just in general speaking, what are your thoughts in relationship to, and I know when Dr. Green was still superintendent of the schools, the mindset was that we have no problem with what I would call porn material and literature being available for the students. In fact, I'm looking at a headline, elementary school assistant principal says kids reading porn in school is okay. The assistant principal of a Florida school remarks in a recent hearing that it's appropriate for an 8-year-old child to, quote, read pornography and dirty magazines. How is that being handled to you, as far as you know, presently in the Duval County school system? Are they allowing that as they were under Dr. Green's tutelage and leadership, or has that been stopped?
They are not allowing it.
Mm-hmm.
They are not allowing it. Everything I have witnessed is that there are some inappropriate books made available in school libraries.
Mm-hmm.
When members of the public have discovered that and brought it to the school district's attention and the school board's attention, no one will publicly defend that. So that's a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
It's not radical. It's not extreme. It's common sense. Parents do not want sexually explicit material made available to their students.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a controversial stance.
Right.
And you will
it
not.
It should not be. But
no,
it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But here in Duval County, sometimes you have to expose and read from the book out loud for them to understand
yes.
it's there.
Absolutely.
But when it is made known, you won't find, I don't believe, on the school board, current school board, or this current superintendent, a defense of that.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful to hear that. Tell us your position, Rebecca, on educational vouchers, which would allow a parent to educate their child at the school or entity of their choice. What is your position on that?
Strong supporter.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it is wise. This movement that's really sweeping across the country, which is to fund students, not systems. So I believe...
Let the money follow the student.
Let the money follow the students.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it is doing is it's opening up opportunity to students and families that need an educational choice that perhaps the public school system may not be providing. And what that is doing is, you know, it's the rising tide analogy, right? A rising tide lifts all boats. So when what we've seen over the course of time is that the school district and the school boards, unfortunately, have not responded honestly or quickly enough to the fact that enrollment is falling in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only thing they do seem to respond to is when they start losing funding as a result of mm-hmm. dropping enrollment. So if that's what it takes to right the ship and to get us to start returning to the fundamentals of educating students with high quality literacy and math and history, and leaving the indoctrination out, leaving any social agendas out.
Yes.
If that's what it's going to take, so be it. We've got to turn our education system around.
We must do that. In fact, as you were speaking, I'm thinking so many parents today feel that they have no choice, no opportunity for input, that their voices are not heard. And yet, you touched on it earlier, where there was an approach by your opposition, the one that's presently on District 3 school board, that limit the amount of words, limit the amount of time to try to prevent input from parents. I believe it's time that we open the door and allow parents' concerns to be heard. Now, going back to the school voucher, I believe that we need to have a system of education that, as we talked about, the money follows the student, and allowing the parent to make the decision, a public school, charter school, or a Christian school, et cetera, to make their choice, parochial school, that the parent makes that choice and the funds. Now, one of the things that I hear so often when I touch on that is the fact that many of the school leadership say that if we have the vouchers and students go to other schools other than the public school, that it causes a reduction of the income for the school system. Now, I am pretty familiar with, for example, the charter school system. If a student goes to the charter school, that charter school receives 66% of the total that's allocated for that student. That means the net residuum that is left is still in the till for the Duval County public school system. So how is it a fact that some think that if a child goes to a charter school, that the public school system, Duval County, for example, is losing money, when there should be a residuum there that's an increase on the net, not a decrease? What are your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, it sounds to me like you know the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You may have read the book called School Choice Myths by Corey DeAngelis, and he spells all this out.
Yes.
You're absolutely correct. In what other industry, even with Medicaid and Medicare, the funding follows the patient.
Right.
So people are waking up to that reality. And I think the sooner the school board and school districts acknowledge that this is inevitable, that we can adjust and start fixing things, watching where our dollars and cents are going. The school board currently has over $2.5 billion budget, larger than the city of Jacksonville's budget.
Right.
So the voters vote for sales tax increase. The voters vote for a millage increase to support the children. This is about the children of Duval County. So we want the children to have what they need. But we keep giving them more money, and the results are moving in the opposite direction.
Opposite direction, absolutely.
So it all goes hand in hand.
The academic process is going down rather than up, even though the funds are increasing and the tax burden increasing. I'm looking at a headline that says, Jacksonville teacher speaking out over the new DCPS permission slip policy. DeVoe County Public School implemented a new policy requiring permission slips to be signed by all school-sponsored events, including classroom parties. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that is an unfortunate news story. The district does not require that. I think there was one principal, as far as I know, one principal in one school that decided to say parents have to sign a permission slip for a birthday party or to get cupcakes in the classroom. That is not the intent or the purpose of the Florida Department of Education rules related to informing parents of what's going on. And I think most people see that, you know, to be a silly kind of political kabuki theater to get people up in arms thinking that the law requires that, but it does not.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in this article, Rebecca says, according to the new rule, that's the Florida state statute and the rule thereof, and when a statute is formed, there's the Promulgating Enablement Act that gives the rules and the regulations to carry it out. Florida school districts have to create procedures that fully inform parents of school-sponsored events. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. So the procedure is that the parents be fully informed, regardless of what is taking place, whether it's the academic, whether it is something that is questionable as far as the material being taught in the classroom, CRT and the LGBTQ agenda, et cetera, that the parent needs to be informed. And with that, the parent should have an opt-out, an opportunity to say, no, my child's not going to be confronted with that.
Correct.
That's all the rule is saying.
Right.
But yet we have those, as you said, that's chattering about the fact that if you have a party, you've got to get it signed off on it. And that was, as you said, his position that would make it sound onerous for the school district to follow that policy. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking today with Rebecca Nathanson. We're talking about School Board District 3, the election coming up in August. The telephone number is 904-831-0917, 904-831-0917. We invite your telephone call, your question to Rebecca today in relationship to her candidacy. Rebecca, again, while I'm thinking of it, tell our listeners how they can jump on board, help you run the race.
Thank you.
To win.
Yes, thank you. Well, first of all, if you happen to live in School Board District 3 in Duval County, you can vote for me in August. But I'm sure a lot of this listening audience may not live in District 3. You can absolutely help me. You can go to my website, voteforbecky.com, and that's F-O-R. So it's voteforbecky.com, and you can make an online donation of any amount. It's greatly appreciated. I have to raise money to get my message out, and that will help fund campaigns, signs, and all that good stuff. Another way you can help is I need volunteers. So if anybody would like to help down the road closer to the election with door knocking and phone banking, it's a lot of fun.
And waving signs.
Waving signs, absolutely. I would love your help. So if you go to my website, there's an easy form for you to contact me and either just ask for more information or let me know what you'd like to do. If you'd like to host an event for me or introduce me to other donors, I would love to hear from you. So www.voteforbecky.com.
Rebecca, I'm thinking I need to say this. It's just like a House of Representatives race. They might represent a district, but once they're in office, they represent all of us. So, ladies and gentlemen, even though she's running for a school board District 3, once she is sworn in and part of the school board for Duval County, she represents we the people. And so therefore, don't make the decision that I can't help or can't support because she is not in my district. I'm telling you, once she goes into office, she represents all of Duval County. And so therefore, it behooves us to pray for her, to encourage her, to support her, and to be willing to wave signs out on the street corner and to be involved in making the telephone calls, etc. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful privilege and opportunity for us to get behind a conservative Christian candidate to make sure that God places those in office that would be carrying out the task that God has called us to do. Train up a child the way he should go. When he's old, he will not have departed from it. That's my mantra. That's my mindset. And I pray that you will adhere to that. Rebecca, there's an issue that I am very, very serious-minded about, and I don't know your position. And I believe our listeners would like to know, what's your major concern about school safety and the campus security? And subordinate to that question, should schools have continue to have the school safety police, or should the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office have the lion's share of that responsibility? What's your position on school safety and school policing?
That's a great question. I don't know if you've read it, Dr. Youngblood, or your listeners, but a grand jury did an investigation and looked extensively into Duval County Public Schools, and they made some recommendations in that presentment. So if anybody listening is interested in that, again, go to my website, and I can email you the presentment. But one of the recommendations that the grand jury investigation made was that the school police force, as it's currently structured, only reporting to a superintendent, not to the sheriff.
Not concerned about the job.
Is a conflict of interest.
Right.
And I do think we need to relook at either the reporting relationship or the school police. I think there could be a dotted line reporting relationship to somehow involve TK Waters, our Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, to have some kind of a liaison to be a part of the actual security and safety plans and handling crimes on campuses, because it's too easy right now to ignore or mask. Criminal offenses that are happening on school grounds.
Right. Well, you touched on it, and let me drill a little deeper for our listeners' benefit. I personally am persuaded that we need to do away with the school policing policy and approach. I believe we need to have a secure campus, need to have secure policies, and I also believe that we need to use Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, police officers, patrolling and protecting our school campuses across Duval County. I believe that is in my mind, that's the highest priority if we're going to have safety in our school system. We can look across the nation. We've seen different shootings at different schools and how many times the school police officers did not do the job properly. I believe they're not properly trained. Many of the school police that we have in Duval County are retired from JSO or former JSO officers, which means they have some good credentials and background. But in general, it's my opinion we need to have the funding for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office that will allow the hiring, the academy, police academy, the training, and putting the badges and the uniforms on fully trained police officers for Duval County that will be also responsible for policing our school campuses. I believe that is the answer to it. I realize that's a politically charged hot button that many do not agree with, but I believe that is the answer. I believe it has Jose on the line. Jose, go over the question or comment, please.
I just got a quick question, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against the public school system, but when did it change? Instead of teaching math, science, history, everything that is common sense, they go with that, pushing that agenda that we all know about, gender and all that thing. And my other question that I have is, there's going to be a dark force behind who's pulling the strings on the educational system throughout America, because you see teachers not going with the flow, and they get put in office, or they being removed in a sudden way, unless you abide by what that dark force person or whoever it is pulling the strings then you're going to be like canceled. Even in the educational institutions, do you have any idea who's behind all these crazy things? Because this is, the kids need to know the common sense things, math, history, and how about economics, you know, financing, so they know how to invest the money once they graduated. And that's my question, because there's going to be a strong hand behind it. That's it coming from D.C.? Or who's behind all of these? Because that's affecting the whole nation, the school districts, because they have to abide by agenda. But who's pushing that agenda? Who's forcing them to follow that agenda? That's my question. Thank you very much. I'll be listening.
Thank you, Jose. Rebecca, I'll let you answer that question.
That's a deep, deep question. And I think a lot of us are waking up to what's happening in our education system and asking the same question. But I think the more important thing to focus on is to get engaged, pay attention, ask questions, and shine a light. Because all we can affect is our local school board, our local schools. And when we have evidence of things happening that are contrary to what the public wants or what the vast majority think are right or effective in terms of children's education, we've got to speak up because we can move the needle locally. So that's what I would say to that.
And Jose, too, I know you have, you're still listening. Let me say this. From my background, experience, and research, to answer your question succinctly, it is the National Educational Association Teachers Union, and out of the Teachers Union funds that they are charging our teachers across the nation, they're using those funds to fund those things that you and I both would call liberal policies through the Socialist, Marxist, Communist, Democratic Party in the United States of America. And I do not know the Teachers Union for Duval County as to what they contribute to, but I would be willing to say that there's a high probability there's the same cause and effect. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got just a couple of minutes left, and we're talking with Rebecca Nathanson, that is the school board candidate for District 3 in Duval County School Board. Rebecca, how would you handle public criticism and pressure outside of with outside interest groups? What do you do with that?
That's a great question, and I feel like I've been in the heat of that criticism over the last couple of years, more than I expected or knew I was signing up for. But on the one hand, I recognize that as an elected official, public criticism and pressure will just be a part of the job. I believe that fearing that criticism is no way to lead, and mm-hmm. I'm going to do what's right. The best I know it, and the pressure campaign only works when it gets in your head. I like to lean on a quote from Justice Clarence Thomas, who said, "You can be in the middle of a hurricane, or you can be on a calm day. North is still north. You can be in a thunderstorm. North is still north. People can yell at you. North is still north. It doesn't change fundamental things. And in this business, right is still right, even if you stand by yourself." So I renew my mind every morning with the Word of God, and I hold on to the truth, and I just try to do the right thing.
Amen. That could be better said than Clarence Thomas's statement. That's good. Rebecca, one more time, tell to get the people your email address and how they can contact you to get on board.
Thank you. Go to voteforbecky.com. Again, that's the word for. So VOTEFOR. Becky, BECKY.com. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Youngblood.
Well, it's been our delight. We'll continue to pray that God will open the doors and allow others to jump on board and assist you with your campaign. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University. 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida. Located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly 9 to 10 for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM.